Hey everyone, thank you for joining the Georgia Chiropractic Association for today's webinar on employment law. We are excited to introduce our host, Stuart Oberman of Oberman Law Firm for this event. But before we get started, I need to do a quick sound check to make sure everyone can hear what I'm saying. So on the right-hand side of your screen, there's a little chat box where y'all can talk to me and kind of send questions and all that. So if y'all can just pop in there, you know, just say hello or yes, we can hear you. Just, you know, kind of let me know that you guys can hear us. And I see a few coming in already. So that is perfect. Thank you guys so much for that. So before we get started, I just want to invite all of our attendees to our upcoming fall conference, which is October 20th through 23rd at the Westin Atlanta Perimeter. In fact, today's webinar is a sneak peek into one of our free business building classes. These non-CE classes were designed to help you build your chiropractic practice. Now we are offering a variety of topics, including best marketing practices, retirement planning. We also have an exciting personal injury roundtable, which is that Thursday evening. Now, Stuart Oberman is speaking on that Sunday, October 23rd from 8 to 10 a.m. And again, this is a sneak peek into that class presenting. So you can register for our fall conference online on our website. That's at gachiro.org. And you can also call us at 770-723-1100. We're still taking registrations for both our CE classes and these business building classes as well. These non-CE business building classes are free, but we still require pre-registration just so we can have an accurate headcount. And then before I hand this over to Stuart, we just want to thank him and Oberman Law Firm so much. They have been great supporters of the Georgia Chiropractic Association. We really appreciate their support. We are so excited to have y'all with us for today's webinar. So for our attendees, if you can give me just a couple seconds here on our end, I will switch things over to Stuart and we will go ahead and get started.
Carly, thank you. Just a pleasure to be here. And there's so much information that we want to just get out to everyone, and we got a lot of hot topics today, and you know, we're looking forward to getting some questions afterwards if the attendees would like, and we're looking forward to participating in the association's fall conference, which should be fantastic, and we're just glad to be part of it. So I guess are we ready to start the slideshow?
Yeah, everything looks great on our end, good. And I think y'all are good to go.
All right. Well, there's a couple hot areas. First off, we want to start with is that employee embezzlement is huge. That is huge. And let's go back to our table of contents. We'll go through that first. So there's a couple hot topics that we want to hit. And you know, obviously one of them is employee embezzlement. Employee embezzlement is really rampant in the chiropractic field. And we're going to go through some signs that our listeners want to take a look at, and practice owners, and just signs they want to be aware of. The U.S. Department of Labor, that continues to be a problem with audits. And they are becoming very, very aggressive on what they are doing on the audit field. OSHA whistleblower, that is becoming a very, very dangerous area. OSHA is becoming very active on employment matters now. I always say now that OSHA is in the employment business, which is extremely dangerous for practice owners. And then cybersecurity, we're going to go through some things regarding ransomware. And, you know, it's really with security issues as they are now, I always say it's not a question of if you're going to be hit, but it's simply when you're going to be hacked. And hopefully we can get some items to the attention of the practice owners and make sure that they are good to go and make sure that they have enough security protocols in place. So employee embezzlement, you know, like I say, it's rampant. And doing some statistic analysis on this, and I was really amazed as to the amount of embezzlement in these practice areas. Statistically, 40% of all chiropractic offices are going to be hit with embezzlement. That's huge. I really think it's probably 50 to 60%. The 40% you sort of hear about, the other 10 to 15%, 20% you don't. The average embezzlement, amazing. It's 105,000. You just really would not think it's that much, but it really is. And it's not something that happens over time. I mean, something happens over time. It doesn't happen overnight, obviously. And the doctors, they get busy. They just don't really become aware of what's going on in their practices. Signs of embezzlement. You know, if our owners and employees would take a step back, they see signs all the time. And they just have to realize these signs when they see them. You know, one, if they fail to get, you know, financial information in a timely manner. If our practice owners can't get information, financials, P&Ls, profit and loss statements on a monthly basis from their people in the accounting office, that's a huge, huge problem. One of the other signs is that employees resist change. A lot of times, doctors want to go ahead and change software, change programs, and then it for those that are embezzling, it takes longer for them to figure out. So if you got employees that are resisting change and screaming and hollering that we've done it great for this many years, we don't need any other changes, that's a huge problem. Charts. You know, I always recommend, always, that the doctors review these charts. Random audits, 10, 15 a month. You need to look for adjustments. If you're not looking for adjustments on these files, on patient files, then you're really doing yourself a disservice because there is an enormous amount of free work going out the door to friends, to families. And also, one of the biggest areas is insurance check embezzlement. They're zeroing out these accounts. Their checks are going in wrong accounts, into the employees' accounts. So you've got to understand how the adjustments work and what to look for. I'm not a big advocate of taking cash in these practices because you can't track cash. If you do, you got to have at least, you know, two or three safeguards to collect cash, and it procedurally is very, very, very difficult. One of the most obvious signs is that, you know, you got an employee refuses to take vacation. You know, we all think that that employee loves you. They don't want to take any time off. They love coming in on weekends. They love coming in, you know, nights and early in the mornings. That's not the case. If you got an employee who doesn't take vacation, that is an obvious warning sign that that is a huge problem, huge problem. So what do you do if you suspect that, you know, there's embezzlement? First and foremost, you never, ever confront an employee, never. You got to build the case. You got to get the practice audits. You got to hire a forensic accountant. You got to start performing spot audits. If you think numbers are not adding up, then you got to pull your files, your charts got to match your day sheets, got to match your deposits, you got to match the credit card receipts. All these have got to be audits. And let me go to the previous page. On these audits, I'm just going to tell you, some CPAs are not qualified to do the audits. I'm going to go out on the limb is that most of practice CPAs are not qualified to do forensic audits. That's a very, very specialized area. And not every accountant is suited for that area. They do great on taxes. They do great quarterly filings, but they can't do audits. And that's a huge, huge problem. So what do you do if you suspect embezzlement? One, you got to seek legal advice because there's so many ramifications if the investigation is not done correctly. And you'll never catch a person if they're done, if it's not done correctly. There's whole industries out there that do nothing but embezzlement investigation. And that's such a specialty area that you just have to hire the right people. You got to have a strategy. I mean, this is not something, you've got somebody who's embezzling thousands of dollars. You just can't fly off and accuse people of embezzlement. You got to have a strategy. You got to have a checklist. You got certain things you got to go through. And then you got to work closely with your CPA or forensic audit accountants. Again, it's a specialty area. I always say that if you suspect embezzlement and you've got partners or spouses involved, everyone is on the table for investigation. You can't leave anyone out. You can't leave out the office manager that's been with you for 20 years. You can't leave out the employee that's been with you for 10 years. You know, the one who watches your children. You can't leave anyone out. especially partners. You just can't leave those guys out. Also, one of the things you cannot do is that you can't, so let's say you have an employee that steals $30,000 or $40,000, and they've got a 401k with you, they got a SEP IRA with you, you cannot confiscate that particular investment tool, the IRA or the 401k, because that is against the law. You've got to work out some kind of payment plan, or they've got to reimburse you, or they can sign over the account once they cash it in, but you can't just automatically confiscate that account, because a lot of times that'll get you in more trouble than it would be the employee who's just embezzling from you. U.S. Department of Labor. I'm just going to tell you, the U.S. Department of Labor is becoming very, very aggressive on their investigations. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's revenue-based. It's employee complaint-based. So what do you need? You got to be ready for an audit. Employees in the practices now, they're either present employees or past employees. They're notifying the U.S. Department of Labor that there's problems. They're not being paid. They feel vindictive. They're not happy. They feel cheated. And they complain. So then you get a nice little letter that's probably 2 or 3 pages that says that they are seeking to enforce the Fair Labor Standards Act, the Family and Medical Leave Act, the Davis-Bacon Act, McNamara-O'Hara Service Contract Act, Consumer Credit Protection Act. These are all things that they are, quote, investigating. So literally, I call it the 72-hour bombshell, because within 72 hours, they give you a list of what you have to prepare and get for them quickly. So you've got tax ID numbers you have to get. You have to get the names of all the officers of the entities that you have. If you have multiple offices, you've got to produce all those. Branch locations, you've got to go ahead and sales for the last 3 years. And I got to tell you, with some of our practice owners, it is very difficult to get this information in a timely manner, either from them or their accountants. We have accountants for our clients that can't even find their clients' records. And that's dangerous. Tax returns, you got to know where those are at within 72 hours quickly. You got to provide a total number of employees. You have to provide a copy of the Family Leave and Medical Act. And you have to provide what notices you gave to your employees. Now, if you're under 50 employees, you're in a whole different ballgame. You don't necessarily have to comply with that, but there are times when they will ask for it, even though you may not qualify for that particular federal guidance. So if you look up at the top, Code Section 29 CFR, that's federal law. They will also ask you for the name, address, phone numbers, job descriptions, work permits for all your employees for the past 3 years. We've had some investigations that have actually went back 5 years. That's a lot of information to dig. Some of our clients, their practices are like turnstiles. They just have employees coming and going and coming and going. And those are the ones that have a lot of difficulty producing all this information. You got to produce payroll registers, timesheets, payroll records, time punch cards. All these have got to be handy. And if you don't know where they're at, your office manager don't know where they're at, you got a huge problem. So you've got to be organized. And you also can't leave it up to your payroll companies to get all this information to you ASAP, because sometimes it takes them days and weeks to get this information to you. So what happens is, if you can't produce it, that's not good. They come to your office. And then they figure out how to get it, whether it's taking computers, whatever it may be, confiscating records, but they will get this information sooner or later. Now, before, you know, you are subject to an audit, one of the keys is that you have to develop a wage and hourly program, whether it's by employee manual or certain guidelines. Now, with the rule changes starting December 1st, and with overtime rules, you have to implement these programs, because if not, you're going to be way behind. You're going to be subject to penalties. You got to train your staff on employment matters. If you don't train your staff on employment matters, they don't understand what to do. They got to look to you for guidance. You have to now establish an overtime record program. It is so difficult now to keep track of overtime, and overtime includes talking to employees after 40 hours if they're on the job, text messaging, emails. All this communication now after 40 hours a week is overtime, and that's where our practice owners are getting hit, is on the overtime issues and the improper designation for these employees, exempt, not exempt. You got to establish protocols. One way to help is you know, obviously legal-wise and CPA-wise, but you've got to have protocols in place. Common mistakes. You know, whenever you have an investigation, you know, whether it's the Georgia Department of Revenue, whether it's the U.S. Department of Revenue, whether it's OSHA, you know, whether it is, you know, the Georgia Department of Labor, whatever it may be, only give them what they ask for. Don't give them any more than what they ask for. If they ask for A, B, and C, give them A, B, and C, not D, E, F, and G. That, because once you give them more than what they ask for, you open up the door for problems. Once you give them what they're asking for, make sure it's organized. You know, we have a lot of times clients just give stuff to us in boxes and you know, folders, and we've got to dissect all this information. And the State Department of Revenue employees, the Federal Department of Revenue employees, the IRS, Department of Labor, they don't have the time, and they're not going to spend the time to go ahead and organize your files. You've got to do that and give it to them in nice, neat fashion so you have a record of also what they have and what you've given them. Categorize it. Label it. If you have an investigator who you're cooperating with, just don't give them stacks of documents, because that's just not going to work. OSHA. OSHA is now in the employment business, which is dangerous. OSHA now controls about 13 to 15 regulatory agencies. And, you know, we all think of OSHA, you know, sterilization and mold. Those guys are becoming very, very aggressive in employment matters. So what is the whistleblower, and how does that affect the practice? You know, years ago, you hear whistleblower, you think of the big companies, you know, employees, you know, exploiting the federal government and complaining about, you know, IBM and, you know, some of these companies. And but now it's these small practices. So what happens is that under the whistleblower statute is that if an employee complains to OSHA and you retaliate, whether it's firing, discharging, you are now in violation of federal law. And there's the code sections. You cannot retaliate. So what does that mean? So the employees are essentially protected in the workplace for complaining to OSHA about adverse action. You can't fire them. You can't lay them off. You can't demote them. You can't take other things into your control. So why would they file complaints? They feel discriminated against. They feel like their rights have been violated, and they exercise their rights. They have the right to complain to OSHA if there's a violation. It's easy to file a complaint. And these are things you've got to be aware of now as a practice owner or as an associate in a practice or an office manager. You've got to know about the whistleblower statute, because the rules have changed. So what happens is Section 11 prohibits an employee from being fired for, you know, complaint about unsafe conditions, unhealthy conditions. And it's amazing what employees about. So what happens is that if they file a complaint and you take action against that employee, you have to demonstrate that that was a protected activity, whether it's discharging an employee or just laying them off, whatever it is. You've got to show it's protected. Now, also, in some cases, that the employer knew or should have known that the employee has filed a whistleblower complaint, even though you didn't even know. So 3 months ago, if the employee files a complaint and you fire them today and you didn't even know about them filing a complaint, under the presumption of the OSHA whistleblower statute, you should have known that they filed a complaint. That is an enormous, enormous burden to overcome. Enormous burden to overcome. It's almost impossible. So what happens is that now you have this complaint and it's referred to the Solicitor General's office for investigation, okay? So now you're under investigation, and that's obviously not good. Complaints that are found to be without merit are dismissed. And I'll say the ones that we've been involved in, they've done a real good job dismissing complaints that have not been valid. You know, some continue and some are dismissed. You just have to go ahead and be aggressive with the responses. So let's say OSHA finds a violation has occurred. So now you get the wonderful task of paying the employee's back wages. Now you have to reinstate the employee that you just fired. And then worst case scenario is you got to pay the attorney's fees. That's a quick summary of a very complicated federal law. So we just looked at two things that are federal. We looked at OSHA and we looked at U.S. Department of Labor. The Georgia Department of Revenue is not necessarily as aggressive on some things, and some things they are more aggressive on. Cybersecurity, that's a huge, huge issue right now. And as practice owners, you guys have got to understand cybersecurity and how it comes into play with HIPAA and the federal government violations and requirements. Ransomware, it's huge, huge problem now. Our chiropractic offices are being hit with ransomware. There's serious security breaches. And ransomware really is just designed simply to extort money. That's it. And it's not a lot of money. You know, a lot of times our cases are, you know, $3,500, $5,000. They're not a lot of money. So what happens is that the offices are hacked. And you have a little thing on your screen that shows you how to go ahead and pay the ransom, and then they dismiss and release your software. Now, the problem that we've run into is in years past, they've released it, and you could fairly objectively indicate whether or not some of that has been returned or not returned. Now, you really don't know if they're taking all that information and giving you back everything. All the ransomware is encrypted. So what happens is once they find out that you have transferred the money, then at that point they unencrypt your software. So what happens is that once they encrypt it, you can't gain access to your information. Your computer's as if they're shut down forever and you can't get it. Everything in the systems are blocked. Now just imagine if you got thousands of patients and all of a sudden you can't get into your computers. How much of a HIPAA violation is that? Because now you've got enormous breaches and you've got enormous data in your systems, names, addresses, social security numbers, credit cards, insurance information that has pretty much been sucked to the black market. One of the dangerous tools is phishing. You know, we all get these emails, we think we know somebody, and we open them, and boom, next thing you know, you got viruses everywhere. A lot of the websites that are visited, you got to be careful where your employees are visiting websites. They contain malware. As a policy, I will not have your employees allowed to use office computers for their own email systems, web surfing. Forget about it. You can't let them use that. So what happens is ransomware has been infiltrated, and it's under your particular computer or network. So then they outline exactly Bitcoin currency, Once it's transferred, then all of a sudden you're unencrypted. Now, a recent article came out that 80% of all Bitcoin currency is controlled out of China. That's scary. It's become so sophisticated now that the ransomware guys now have customer service departments to get your software unencrypted. That is a whole different level. When you've got criminals that are not only hacking your system, stealing data, selling it probably in the black market, but now they got customer service departments, that is a game changer. So the fines, you know, obviously you got to prevent. But after the breach occurs, then all of a sudden you've got a lot of issues regarding HIPAA violations. You know, you've got, if it's a breach over 500 patients, you got to notify the FTC. There's a whole separate reporting requirements. You've got to give the credit bureau information to the patients and let them know that you've been breached. You got to send letters out. It's a whole different world once it's been breached. If you've been breached, my recommendation is that you hire a forensic specialist. A lot of our practice IT guys, they're not qualified to give, you know, cybersecurity information and how it occurred. They're not qualified to plug these holes, to plug the systems, and to find out where it came from and where it designated from. I would not use the normal IT guy, so to speak, regarding any kind of forensics. I would use a forensic specialist to determine where that breach occurred and where it originated and how to stop it. So now what happens is, let's go back. You now are able to have certain software monitoring systems where you can monitor your systems on a daily basis, hourly basis. You can have sort of a service every month where you have a cybersecurity check. You can have a year analysis. There's now ways to prevent these massive breaches. Nothing is foolproof, but all you can do is the best you can to try to prevent it. Some security guidelines, obviously do not charge mobile devices via laptop or USBs. Sensitive data, you know, where's your sensitive data stored? You got to be real careful where you're accessing information, you know, public open airways, you know, all these things add up. Annual IT assessment. I recommend our practice owners have an IT assessment every year. And limit, you know, we have practices that we discover have public Wi-Fis in their lobbies. That's dangerous. You cannot have public Wi-Fis, especially for employee use. You know, examine where, you know, use of the cloud. A lot of people are under the assumption that the cloud is 100% secure. It is not. You got to discover where your vulnerabilities are, where you need to update your software continuously, and where the potential problems are. You know, a lot, if you go to HHS, Health and Human Services website, you'll see that a lot of breaches occur because simply people lose devices, they lose laptops, they lose smartphones, they lose USB drives. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on these drives, and they're losing them, and they're losing thousands and thousands of patients' information. You have flash drives that are constantly being, you know, taken from one practice to another or taken home or for whatever reason. And it's a breach. If they lose that with all that patient data, that is a huge breach. And those are a lot of areas, you know, portable devices are being stolen and misplaced and left. If practice owners have third-party vendors that have access to their systems, I strongly recommend that you understand that their systems have to be secure. Practice consultants, their systems have to be secured. If they have access to your systems and they're breached, chances are they're coming right into your systems. So, you know, design and implement segmented networks. You can run dual systems. You have to have the servers, the wireless, the personal computers. Talk to your IT guys. Figure out how to run these mirror systems, and therefore your data is not in danger should something happen. you know, we're coming to the end of the slide now, and there's so much information that we could talk about on cybersecurity breaches, but chances are you probably may have been breached and you really don't even know it. Simple implementation of, you know, security guidelines will go a long, long way. I would never let cost stand in the way of security. It's worth it to spend a little bit of money, have secure systems, make sure there's no HIPAA breaches, and it's all you can do, the best you can do. But if there's a cyber breach, you got to take action, and there's certain things you've got to do under federal law compliance. So we've covered a lot of ground in about 30 minutes, and you know, we've covered embezzlement, U.S. Department of Labor. We've covered cybersecurity. We've covered OSHA. That's enormous, enormous areas to cover. Hopefully, we cover those even more at the fall conference, which I'll be speaking at. And it's been a pleasure. And if there's any questions, you know, Carl, we can have a question or two if that's what the viewers, you know, want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We can go ahead and take some questions. We do have some time for those. There's a chat box on the right side of your screen, guys, that I have pointed out earlier. So y'all are welcome to pop in some questions through that chat box.
I'll say this. You know, this really, what we're doing today is really a credit to the association, because these are some pretty active areas, and I wish, you know, a lot of the associations that we do business with and work with and help out would really take these steps to inform their members. So you guys, you know, as the association, are really way ahead of the ball game in helping out your members, and I really just want to say it's a lot of credit to you guys, because this is a lot of work, and this is really for the benefit of the members, and you guys are just doing a great job keeping these guys informed. So my hat's off to the association for what you're doing.
Well, we'll accept that compliment. Thank you so much. I do have a question about the cybersecurity portion of the webinar. You had discussed what are some things, or that, you know, you had discussed that there's a possible breach that you might not even know about. Is there anything a chiropractor can do or a chiropractic office can do to maybe determine if they have had that breach of information?
Absolutely. So I would strongly recommend that there's a monthly monitoring system, and these are not expensive things to do. So what happens is that if something is irregular, there's maybe a breach where it may not be discovered by you, but it may be discovered by the cybersecurity company, you know, a lot of times they can catch these, you know, these problems pretty early and bring it, you know, they may not catch it like right away, but they could probably catch it within a couple of days, you know, once their systems are monitored. But there's monitoring you can do, you know, on a daily basis. There's monthly monitoring you can do, you know, on a monthly basis. So you can get these systems and these companies to monitor what you're doing. So you can know pretty quickly whether or not there's a breach. Otherwise, it may be months and months and months down the road before you even discover anything. By that time, it's way too late.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll give the attendees just a couple more minutes to pop in any questions. We are a little ahead of schedule, but that works just fine, I think, for everyone here during our little lunch break webinar. I do just want to touch on a few more announcements that we have. Just as a quick reminder, this webinar, as Stuart said, is a sneak peek into his presentation at our upcoming fall conference. The conference is October 20th through 23rd. Mr. Oberman is speaking 8 to 10 a.m. that Sunday, October 23rd. You can see the complete schedule on our website, gachiro.org. You can also register for any of these classes, including the free non-CE business building course on our website, gachiro.org, or you can also call us at the office at 770-723-1100. And I also don't think I touched on this earlier, but just as a reminder, this recording will be available and emailed to all attendees within 24 to 48 hours. So please be on the lookout in your emails for this recording. We'll also have it on our website as well. I'll give you guys just a couple more seconds to pop in any extra questions. I see some people typing, so I want to make sure, you know, no one gets left off here. But again, thank you so much to Obermann Law Firm for this wonderful webinar today. And I'm not seeing anything else come in, so we'll go ahead and let everyone go. Thank you guys so much for attending, and we hope to see you in just a couple of weeks at our fall conference. Take care.
Thank you.